Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, our live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets this afternoon. Once again, to take your questions, it's Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell. He's got extensive background in all sorts of veterinary medicine. It's always a pleasure to welcome Dr. Scharf to the program. So let's do that. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Ray. It's sure an honor following Colin Powell.
Yeah, not bad, huh?
I'm honored.
Well, we'll see if you can hold up here. Now, it's summertime and, of course, fireworks season coming up. And some pets don't take too kindly to that, from what I understand.
This is a big time of year for some animals, in particular dogs who have a noise phobia.
Yeah.
Noise could include either fireworks or thunder. And they are truly more than just bothered. They're phobic. They are frantic. They are so frantic that they are destructive to themselves and to their house. If you put them in a crate, they'll struggle so hard to get out of the crate, and they usually or frequently will get out of the crate, and there will be blood and there will be excrement, and you're talking a dramatic picture. There are ways that we could try to make it a little better for them, but it requires effort, it requires work, sometimes it requires medication.
Yeah.
But at the very least, if an animal's getting frantic, if a dog is getting frantic with an oncoming storm, to put them into an interior room or a closet where the sound is muffled, where they can't see the lightning. Some people like these thunder coats, the thundershirts.com, I think is where the website is, or Storm Defender, which is a cape, which is supposed to prevent the static charges from getting to their coat. That's a theory, and some people think some dogs benefit from.
So is that why dogs go nuts, or is this something that happened when they were little pups?
You got to wonder about the latter, that something happened when they were pups. However, there are instances in which you can't discern any prior experience that set the dog off. So it's presumable that it's something that happened, but you can't always document that was the case. So there are various things. There's behavior modification. There are, like I said, medications, and then there's more medications.
Yeah.
There are measures you could take. There's a synthetic pheromone you could use. There are various things that could be done, but the more you prepare for it in advance, the less frantic, the less bothersome it'll be, the less destructive, hopefully, when the time comes. Usually there's some medication, a tranquilizer, maybe a sedative or even an SSRI, antidepressant, literally. So it depends on how bad it is, but it's fortunately a small percentage of dogs that have to struggle with the problem.
Could it be, animals, I understand, have different hearing ranges than humans. Could it be some sub-audible noise or something that's above our range that is just driving the dog frantic?
I think that it's possible that it could be, but I doubt that that's the case, because when I think of dogs' audible range, Ray, I think about them hearing in the upper registers way more than we do.
Mm.
And those lower registers are what the rolling thunder, what that rumbling thunder is going to be causing. So maybe they have greater range than those lower registers also. Maybe it's the static electricity, because a lot of people swear their dogs know that a storm's coming way before the weatherman or before they do.
Yeah.
So who knows?
All right. Well, let's go to the phones. And Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Matt in Hillsdale, you kick it off today, sir.
How are y'all doing?
Hey.
Hi, Matt.
Hi. I have a hilarious little pet rabbit. had her for about 9 months, and she lives mainly in a room by herself. She has her own room, and I was wondering about getting her a friend, a companion, also wondering, whether or not to spay. But I've heard conflicting reports of, if they've gone that long by themselves, if they can have a friend or a companion.
Hmm. Well, it's true, Matt. It's impossible to predict how they're going to take it. I think that 9 months is on the younger age. So that speaks in your favor for getting a companion for your bunny girl. But you never know until you do it. You could try to introduce them in a way that is as little as least challenging for the girl as possible, hopefully from a source in which they can take the new rabbit back should it not work out after a few days. There are rabbits that could exhibit neurotic behaviors when they're being ticked off by another animal, but it's not necessarily in the kind of situation in which there's one rabbit who's got a fairly good, comfortable life, and another rabbit gets introduced. I think that I'd read up on it, Matt. I would try it in a very gentle way as opposed to just throwing the new rabbit in for the old rabbit, the incumbent rabbit, to deal with as she might, fend for herself as she would, and see how it goes. But try to rather, what we do with these the dogs and cats sometimes is introduce a sweatshirt that has the other animal scent on it, the new animal scent on it, and try to introduce the new rabbit in gradual stages. Would that make a difference? Hard to say. You could.
Right.
I would think about trying to introduce the new rabbit into another room or confined within its own hutch within that room so that the incumbent rabbit doesn't feel like the new rabbit's taking over their territory and feels as little challenged as possible. And then just try to introduce that new rabbit to gradually increasing degrees of freedom when you see that the incumbent rabbit is handling it okay.
Yeah. Do you have a sex recommendation?
Well,
always. New rabbit.
All right, now. Easy now, doctor.
I don't. I would say a male. I would say the opposite gender
right.
might be a better bet, but it's hard to say, hard to predict for
all
sure.
All right. Matt, all right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck, Matt.
You know, my wife had a pet rabbit when we first got together, and I never quite understood why you'd have a pet rabbit. They don't seem to do much.
Oh, they can interact, Ray. They're
they
very
do.
Soft.
Yeah,
they enjoy
soft.
Being handled, especially if they're acclimated, socialized from the beginning. They're funny. Like Matt said, they're cute or hilarious, he said. So it's companionship. It's companionship that is not as hard to clean up after a dog or a cat.
Yeah.
So it's less of a challenge. They're more self-sufficient. You don't have to take them out three times a day. You know, so
they're fluffy
very,
enough.
They're good
yeah.
things. They're definitely fluffy.
All right, let's go to Jill in Waterford. Jill.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Hi, doctor.
Hi, Jill.
My sister was given a cat, or actually at the time, a wee kitten, like 5 days old.
Wow.
That she had to pretty much hand raise for a number of months, feeding every 2 hours, even to the point of having to stimulate it to defecate and keeping it warm. I mean, basically, she had to try to imitate the mother.
Sure.
And we weren't even sure if the kitten would live. Well, it's been about a year now. The kitten is still alive, but it has, let's just say, it doesn't act very friendly anymore. When you go to pet her, she'll roll over on her back and she will try to claw or bite you. The only one who is able to pick her up apparently is my young nephew. But anyone else, my sister, my brother-in-law, my nieces, even me, I tried to pet her, and she is the cutest little thing. But she's got these claws and teeth that are like needles, and my sister actually wants to declaw it. And I'm opposed to declawing. But my question is it possible to train a cat? I know they're very free-willed and obstinate, but is it possible to train a cat?
I think, Jill, that it's possible to train a cat to some degree, much less so than a dog, but it's much more of a challenge or impossible to change a personality. So, Jill, if your sister's cat has a personality that doesn't like her personal space too invaded, That's not going to be something that you could change, though if you respect that personal, that need for personal boundaries, then it's not out of the question that those boundaries might soften a little as the years go by. But to try
I mean, she, I'm sorry, don't mean to interrupt. She hand-raised it. So why would it, forgive the pun, bite the hand that fed her?
Well, maybe there was something that behavior caused to happen in that kitten's world at the age of approximately 2 months old that reinforced that behavior is my only conjecture, Jill. It's the only thing that I could wonder was usually behaviors don't continue. Usually they're extinguished, so to speak, if they don't provide or engineer the animal's world to be like the animal wants. I didn't really explain that too well. But usually behaviors continue that produce results that the animal wants or needs. And so that's what makes me wonder that kitten at a tender age of, 6, 8 to 12 weeks of age, 14 weeks of age, just got feedback that reinforced that behavior. And
I was going to say, maybe that's possible because I think I remember when I would visit and the kitten was about 2 weeks old, my sister would stick her pinky in his mouth and he would suckle on her pinky. Well, now she's biting her pinky.
Well, that happens with any nursing or suckling youngster, that they'll nurse and suckle until they are uncomfortable for the mom, and then the mom gives them what for, and then they're not nursing anymore. So that in itself wouldn't necessarily do it, Jill, but maybe it did. If your sister's finger just stayed in there, okay, despite the fact that it was hurting, then, yeah, maybe that was the reinforcer.
Hmm.
That would have been a good time to have withdrawn the finger.
Well, Jill, we got to take a break here, but thank you.
As your sister, I would just give the cat its own space and let the cat come to you. That's how cats operate. They don't take too well when they're approached and when you kind of hone in on them, but rather when you're sitting there and they choose to come to you. So tell your sister to get something that cat likes and just sit there and let the cat pursue your sister.
Okay, Jill, we have to go. Thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome. Good luck.
800-348-2551 is our number, and we will get to more calls with Dr. Ron Scharf coming up.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Schenectady Museum and Planetarium, presenting NASA's Driven to Explore exhibit, July 12th and 13th only, schenectadymuseum.org for event and parking information. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available, thedamcafeandeli.com. David Stein and Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, providing minimally invasive dentistry to families in the Capital District since 1986. DavidSteinDDS.com. The Theater Barn, New Lebanon, New York, presenting The 39 Steps, starting June 29th, running through July 8th. Professional theater in the country, TheaterBarn.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, WaldorfSaratoga.org. And Paul Rich & Sons Home Furnishings and Design, downtown Pittsfield. Furniture, oriental rugs, mattresses, and interior design for living inside and out. Delivery throughout the Northeast, paulrich.com.
Is the number. It's Pets and Vets, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is the guest. So are some cats just born mean?
Some cats have personalities just like some people, Ray.
Why do you look at me in that way? Why do you, you know what?
Well, I think that's a combination. It's nature and nurture. It's what they're born with, which is reinforced by what their environment growing up at the tender, the wonder years, the wonder month stage would be. So it's a combination of both. And it's a source of unlimited speculation among scientists.
All right. Well, let's go to Leslie in Conway. Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're on.
Okay. My first time ever calling a call-in show.
Wow, great to have you.
Yeah. I have four pets, but I'm going to talk about my cat, Maybelle, who has a rather annoying habit. I've had cats all my life, and some cats do this, but she does it to excess. And that is that she likes to present her hind end to you, and she does it pretty aggressively, and it's really quite annoying. And at one time, she even, she's a bossy personality, and she one time even turned, and I was refusing to pet her because I didn't want to reinforce this behavior, and she sprayed her anal sac.
Oh, that's great. Oh, boy.
It was a real delight.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
How bothersome, Leslie. I wouldn't take that.
No.
Whenever that cat's hiney got anywhere near me, I would push that cat away from me. You have to set the limits, and if you succumb, then she's the boss. She gets to do what she wants, and she hasn't gotten any feedback otherwise.
Yeah.
So I have a cat that does a similar thing. He's a very affectionate guy, and he presents his hind end. I don't want his hind end near me, near my hand, near my face. So that's the time where I push him away, and eventually they get the idea that there's certain things or positions or behaviors that you're not interested in.
Right.
Why she does it, I don't know. It does sound like she's a bit of a bossy type.
Yeah.
But you also have a say as well. And especially given that pretty dramatic demonstration.
Yeah.
I would be very cautious about, I would extend my zone of propriety or whatever you want to call it to several feet. Then let the cat demonstrate that the cat is being respectful before I would let that zone get smaller.
So that sounds like it's going to be easier said than done. Because I'm not quite, I guess I could get a water spray bottle and spray her if she starts to come near me.
I would let her near you. I just wouldn't let her maneuver herself so that her hind end is that close to you. Surely not so that you can get sprayed again. At that point, I would either physically remove the cat from the couch or wherever I was sitting, or get up and leave, or if you need to, the spray bottle. I wouldn't try to use the spray bottle on a regular basis, though.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big gun. That's, you know, you want to save that for bigger problems or, you know, if she's being aggressive or something.
All right. Well, good luck, Leslie.
Yeah, I'll need it. Thank you.
Good luck.
The show's taking a disturbing turn. Let's go to Tara in Bloomington. Tara.
Hi. I have a cat who will be 17 in October. And he's starting to lose his balance. He'll just kind of topple over, walk across the room, and just fall over on his side completely from tail to head. He'll be jumping onto something and just mid-air lose his balance and land on his side. And it's something new. I know he does scratch at his ear, so I was thinking maybe it was an inner ear problem. But I'm really not not at the position right now to bring him to the doctor. So I'm just would like some advice.
So the ear, Tara, was the first thing I was going to ask you, because the ear is the first thing that you want to rule out, because it's so common for animals to get ear infections. And if the ear infection is bad enough or chronic enough, it can invade the middle and inner ear. And
then, that's where it's at.
Yes, it's a possibility. Now, the problem is that if there is some kind of breach of the tympanic membrane, otherwise known as the eardrum, then certain medications could be more dangerous. Okay, so it would be preferable. I know that you said that you're unable at this point to take the cat in to have it looked at, but that's one of the things that a veterinarian would want to know, is what is safe to use medication. In order to answer that, you need a diagnosis. In order to do that, you need to look in the ear. So if it's an ear infection, medications might be enough and they might not be enough, because if it penetrates deep enough into the inner ear, then it may not be accessible anymore to topical medication. So it could be a bit of a touchy situation. However, there's another possibility, Tara, that cats and dogs, too, can get problems in their what's called their vestibular systems. Their vestibular system is the semicircular canals and how they connect to the brain. And due to certain conditions called feline vestibular disease or something along those lines, it could make them exhibit symptoms similar to what you're saying, but usually you have an animal who's cocking their head to the side, so they have a head tilt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sometimes they think that straight is really circular, so they'll walk in a circle, okay, and it'll always be to the same side. So you want to see if there's a head tilt, what side it's to. You want to see if they're circling, what side it is circling to. And lastly, you want to see if their eyes are moving, because this vestibular syndrome frequently is accompanied by what's called an astagmus. And astagmus is when the eyes are going in unison back and forth very quickly. And it's usually the fast phase of the back and forth is to the side.
When would I look for the eye movement? What would he be doing what I would look for the eye movement on?
I don't think it comes and goes, Leslie. It's either there or it's not there. Okay? But if it is a vestibular syndrome type thing, then there's a possibility that it might just resolve on its own after a course of several weeks or several months. Now, how long did you say that your cat's been doing that, Tara?
It's been going on for a few weeks.
Well, it's
I'd say at least about 3 weeks now.
And do you have a head tilt? Do you have a circling?
I do have a slight head tilt towards a certain direction. It is the direction he falls in.
Ah, well, that's consistent.
Now, is this a pill they would treat him with? You said
no.
What medicine would you say if my vet recommended I would not want?
Well, there's no medicine if it's the run-of-the-mill, so to speak, feline vestibular syndrome. There is no medication, okay? It'll just get better on its own accord. But if it's a problem in the vestibular system due to an inner ear infection, if there is a ruptured eardrum, then certain drugs are ototoxic. They'll cause a bad reaction when they penetrate the system. However, it's also the case that if it's penetrated the ear canal and it's in the inner ear, then it may not be amenable to topical medication at that point. So that's a bit of a trickier issue. You could try the drops. And what kind of drops would you put in there? Without a diagnosis, hard to say. At least antibiotics. Okay, there's many ear preparations, Tara, that have an antibiotic as well as an antifungal, because a lot of these ear problems are fungal. And a little cortisone, you know, to take swelling and inflammation down. And sometimes just using a broad-spectrum eardrop might do the trick.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, he's about to be 17, so I want to make sure his last golden years are as comfortable
sure.
as possible.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
I didn't want to do anything too intensive. You know, just kind of let him kind of go at his own pace at this point.
Well, take a look in the ear. And see if it's got any debris. See if it's got any smell. Usually, if it's infected,
there's
a smell. Well, that's a good thing. So it may not be a big problem.
Because I'm an ear cleaner. I do clean his ears about once a month, and I've been doing that
how
forever.
Deeply? What do you use? Q-tips?
I just kind of do the outer, you know, flap.
Good.
He had a problem where.
Good.
He had a hematoma in his ear, and we did the surgery. This was about 7 years ago, and they slit his ear open and sutured it back, and, they had to do that twice. And
usually because of a chronic ear problem that they get those hematomas, Tara. So
it,
with
it
a history
really
like that.
It really just came out of the blue.
All right.
Well, sometimes that's the case.
Well, Tara,
too.
Good luck.
I'll go ahead and look into that. You said feline vestibular syndrome or disease, and
that's
something
a possibility.
I should look into?
That's yes.
Okay.
Thanks, Tara.
Okay.
We appreciate it very much. Let's go to Doug in Pittsfield. Doug, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
How are you doing?
Hi, hey, Doug.
I've got a question. I got a German short-haired pointer. She'll be 13 this September, and she's hunted since she was 8 months old. But the problem I've noticed in the last hunting season, and I'm sure this hunting season, and like tonight after work, I'll run her. But the next day, I know she lames up because of her age, but what really gets me is one of her legs she constantly favors for 2 days. So my vet in Pittsfield did x-rays, and what he basically said was, well, Doug, she's getting old. She's got a little bit of the hip dysplasia, but her front leg is, you know, she's got sore joints. So I'm sitting here thinking, I probably should have asked him, but I guess what I'm getting at is I have frozen shoulder. I know I can't throw a baseball anymore, but if a pheasant runs in front of Bonnie, she's after it. So can I give her, what is it, glucosamine or something?
Yes, glucosamine / chondroitin sulfate.
Okay,
absolutely.
But my thing is, if I go to the pet store, like, is it cheap? Can I give her the human stuff or no?
Yes, you can give her the human stuff. The only thing to keep in mind, Doug, it's not a big deal, but the study that looked at 100 of these products around town found that there was a big variation in quality. So, in other words, they're not regulated by the FDA. So you're basically at the mercy of the company that's making it, and a million companies make them. And they found that on these various brands, it might not have been 100, but it was a lot of them, that there were a range of anywhere from 20% of what they said was in there was actually in there to some that actually had more, you know, 112% or something like that. So what I usually do with my clients, Doug, is I give them a proprietary glucosamine chondroitin product that I use that I can vouch for the company. I say use it for a month or two, see if it helps, and then if it does, get your own cheaper type around town and then compare. See how good it is compared to the other. But bear in mind, you're not going to see a response with these until after you've had them on it for a month. It's not so much a drug as it is a supplement, like what they call a nutraceutical, Doug. So
yeah,
it's not going to produce a dramatic improvement, but it can produce an improvement after the course of a month. So absolutely, that's a good idea. Have you tried any non-steroidal, any inflammatories, Doug, any NSAIDs?
No, I haven't done that because, I mean, like I say, the next day she, you know, she'll favor it. And then if a squirrel runs by the front yard, you know, boom, it's
right,
like she forgot it.
That's adrenaline. You know? Yeah, that's adrenaline.
Yeah.
So you could try an aspirin-like medication too, but you want to be careful with those that they don't upset the stomach. And I would talk to your vet about the best, most safest way to use those medications too.
Okay.
You only have to use it for the, you know, the second day and the third day after you run her, and it's one of these few medications that you don't have to keep on using day after day after day in order for them to be effective. It's like you or me taking a Celebrex. You could take it once or twice, and that's it.
Okay.
Right.
Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Ellen in Guilderland. Ellen. Hello, Ellen.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I just, my call waiting just beeped. Said that. I have to warn you, Ray, I have a question about my cat, and if the butt in the face question bothered you, this one's going to bother you.
Oh, you know, I'm usually bothered by three or four questions per Dr. Scharf appearance.
He can stand to be bothered by questions about cats than dogs.
Right.
So,
let's go ahead.
Higher threshold of bothersome.
Fine.
Well, I have a cat who sticks his butt in my face, but I've always taken it as a compliment, so
well,
it doesn't bother me, but that's not my question.
Okay.
He is 4 years old, very healthy, indoor cat, uses a litter box. He won't drink out of anything except the toilet. I've never seen him. I keep water on the kitchen floor for him next to his food, and he will only drink out of the toilet. And I'm wondering, A, is that healthy? He is very healthy. I've never had to take him anywhere. If you tell me it's not healthy, how can I break him of this habit?
You don't have to break him of the habit, Ellen. It's healthy as long as you flush.
I do. I make sure I do because he drinks out of the...
No, that's fine.
Okay.
A lot of animals do it. My own dog does it. Yeah, you're not crazy about it happening from a...
Yeah.
From certain... perspective, but as far as health-wise, I've never known an animal, a dog or a cat, to get any kind of problem medically from drinking out of the toilet.
Well, that's good, because I wasn't looking forward to having to change this habit of his. So.
No, plenty of cats, plenty of dogs do it, and they just like the freshness, the coolness. I don't know what it is, but as long as you have a clean toilet and it's flushed regularly, then it should be no problem.
Yeah. He sometimes will drink out of a dripping faucet.
Yeah, that's real common, believe it or not.
Yeah, but never out of the bowl on the floor.
No sweat.
Wow.
Okay, great. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen.
Take care.
You can start listening now, Ray.
I'm listening. I think the whole thing is very, very impressive. Thank you, Ellen. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Beth in Niskayuna. Beth.
Hi, I'm just calling to help that poor woman whose sister wants to declaw her cat, which I thought was illegal. I thought you can't do that. Isn't that right?
No, there's nothing illegal, Beth. There are certain organizations that say it should not be done, but everything is ultimately up to the individual veterinarian's discretion.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Well, I have a similar tale.
It might be illegal in England, but not in this country.
I thought they weren't allowed to do it anymore.
I think a certain municipality here and there may have a municipal statute that says it should not be done.
Because they can't protect themselves.
Well,
they go outside.
Yeah, they could bite, but it's true that they're at a disadvantage if they go outside. But on the other hand, if you're interested, Beth, in the humaneness and the good treatment of the cat, then you could also argue they shouldn't be going out because they only get into trouble.
Right, but if they do go make it outside, then they're in trouble. But at any rate, we have a similar cat situation, and I had read because I'd never, we heard it was older when we got it, but it was awfully young. We bottle fed it. Is that one of the things that if their kitten mates, like you said, the mother, the kitten mates keep each other in line with their claws, and so that's how they end up, you know, being able to handle being picked up and carried around as adults because their kitten mates will swipe them with equal force. I don't know if it's true or not that, you know, I read that in Kittens for Dummies, and we have a cat of similar temperament, like I said, and I'm able to sort of groom his teeth and things, but I have to be incredibly gentle about picking him up and moving very slowly around him because the water spray does not work. He occasionally comes out and jumps out at you, and the water thing does no good. But we also have a dog who's, but I was going to say, I feel so bad for that woman because I hate to see cats getting, because of what I've read, what it does to them. So I was hoping, I hope she's still hearing. And the cat can be, like I said, if you're insistent, I agree with you, give the cat its space. But if you're insistent, I move very slowly about picking him up and very slowly about carrying him around if I have to do anything with him.
Mm-hmm.
Our dog, on the other hand, and he's getting much better at this as well, we have about a 70-pound former shelter dog, and now it's down to he only freaks out around, you know, Department of Public Works type trucks. I walk him with a harness, and I carry actually the little greeny cat treats with me because he freaks out. It's not, like I said, it's not so bad anymore. We could walk by one of those fire alarm boxes that's doing nothing. I could walk by a small sign and he starts to growl. It would be funny except for a couple of times when I try to restrain him when he goes nuts. And he won't. They don't want to just chase it. They want to kill it.
Yikes.
Wow.
So, but the sign is just low-grade growling. It might be, a garage strikes him funny, and it is much, much better, except for, like I said, I avoid as often as I can any sort of garbage truck. And it is getting better. But those are still things, because I've fallen on my butt a couple of times trying to...
So, Beth, what you want to do, and one thing that I forgot to mention in the when I was briefly going over measures that could be taken with a dog that's got a fear, a phobia for thunder and other noise, is to play some white noise recordings or... loud music, hip-hop music, or something like that.
On a regular
basis.
Just
to drown out the noise that they're freaking out about.
Well, it may not even be make. This is the part. If he sees a garbage can that's open, it doesn't have to be making noise. What I do is I take him over. If he sees something that's scary, he starts to growl, I walk him over to it. Obviously, I am not doing that with a garbage truck because just like with the vacuum cleaner, they don't just want to chase it. They'll try to rip it apart.
So, Beth, the behavior modification that I briefly touched on in the previous caller is something that you might think about doing. It's called what they call counter conditioning and desensitization. The counter conditioning is basically teaching the dog a new behavior for its repertoire. And that behavior is something that you can call settle or relax or calm or whatever. And you basically train them to relax when they hear that word and they get treats. And
I do the treats. I do. And it is much, much better. It's just funny because, like, the other day I thought it was gone. And he's not afraid. He gets playful in thunderstorms. that to him, exciting weather whips him up. But it's, like I said, it's odd things. It's inanimate objects, and they don't have to be made. So I either bring him over, we try to investigate it, except for the garbage trucks, which I just have to avoid. And I do give him little treats. I try to make him sit. And it has, I am trying to do that. That is, yes. And then I'm not sure if the garbage truck thing is just going to eventually go away, or he will go up to, we have a large VW van, and he's in the house if that's running, because he will go try to rip the tailpipe out.
Hey, Beth, I'm sorry. We got a break here. We're a little overdue, so
that's
appreciate the call very
much. Good luck, Beth.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. More calls coming up. 800-348-2551. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting American Impressionism, Masterworks in Watercolor and Pastel, featuring works by Theodore Robinson and John Singer Sargent, arkellmuseum.org. Buckley Beef, Valley Falls, New York, providing all natural grass-fed beef, steaks, hamburger, and sausage, available at McCarroll's Village Butcher, Delmar, buckleybeef.com. Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com. Ventfort Hall, Lenox, Massachusetts, presenting Tea and Talk, a summer lecture series, Tuesdays from 4 to 6 p.m., gildedage.org. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting Walks and Talks in 2012, with hikes, paddles, and presentations for the public throughout the Lake George Basin, including their new Hiking with Chad series, lglc.org. And the Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley, 1-888-525-4767 for appointments.
Okay, it's the home stretch on the Pets and Vet Show, 1-800-348-2551. While we have our last 15 minutes or so here, I ask that you keep the questions fairly brief. We'll try to keep the answers brief and get through as many of you as we can. Of course, Dr. Scharf will be back next month. Let's go to Edward in Lake Katrine. Edward, you're up.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Edward.
Hi, Edward. That's me.
Yeah. Hello, everyone.
Hello. We have a great pier, and his name is Aspen. We rescued him, and I'd like to put a plug in for Great Pyrenees Rescues, by the way.
Okay.
And Barbara Mattson, who's got a Great Pyrenee Rescue, is doing a great job, and this is a plug for her.
Okay.
But our pier, some cartilage broke free and then formed like calcium deposit in the right shoulder. And they call it mouse bone.
Yes, a joint mouse.
Yeah. And the vet, we like the vet, we love the vet. But the vet said, well, you can have surgery or you can put it on Rimadyl. And we've had him on Rimadyl before. And we'd rather not have surgery, so we'd like to keep them on Rimadyl. And I just want to know, you know, I know their side effects and it could be damaging.
Okay. What do you think, Doctor?
So I take it, Edward, that this is a young Great Pyrenees because that cartilage usually breaks off as usually in a younger dog.
Yeah, this is an older dog.
Oh, interesting. So here's the deal on the Rimadyl. The Rimadyl is one of the NSAIDs, the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. And I, Edward, take a lot of effort and time with my clients, telling them what the potential risks are and then telling them how we can avoid those risks. And what I do is I put them on... whether it's the Rimadyl, the Deramax, the Medicam, there are several of them. And I make sure that a blood test is normal first. And then after they've been on that for the first 10 days, I'll recommend doing the small part of that original blood test, which tells us that their liver and kidneys are okay. Because there are 2 or 3 out of 10,000 dogs, Edward, that'll suffer a bad liver or kidney reaction. But 2 or 3 out of 10,000 is very small odds. So when a client of mine wants to renew them, I only suggest that they do the follow-up blood test. I don't require it, but I do think it's a good idea. And then if we keep them on that stuff long-term, I recommend repeating that same blood test twice a year to make sure that it's not causing a problem.
And we've been on Rimadyl before, so...
Yeah, so the other thing that you want to keep in mind is that even more common than a liver or kidney problem is if it causes an upset stomach, a gastroenteritis, an upset of the stomach or intestine, which can get bad enough that it ulcerates. Huh. And if you get an ulcer, you're talking bad news. And the way that you avoid that, Edward, is number one, you always give the stuff with a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you always watch the dog for any loss of appetite or vomiting or diarrhea. Because if you see any of those, you stop the NSAID immediately. And you have them looked at by a vet. And if you do those two things, watching for an upset stomach and watching that the internal organs aren't suffering with a blood test once or twice a year, then the chances of getting a problem are exceedingly small.
Ah, good. All right,
yeah,
Edward,
good news.
Thanks a lot for the call. Phyllis in Hudson. Phyllis, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Hi.
Phyllis, can you turn your radio down just a wee bit?
Yes.
Great.
Sorry. I have a 16-year-old cat, and this past several months or year, he started to lick himself to the point, his stomach, to the point where he's licked off all his hair, and it's all bloody, and it's just this very thin skin. I'm afraid his stomach is going to start protruding. And I've been to the vet, and she gave me some kind of cream, which he just licks off immediately, so it's not helping. And now he's starting it on one of his legs, and I don't know what to do.
Hmm.
Well, you got to figure out why the cat's doing it, Phyllis. And one of the things that I'd look at is, first of all, are there any parasites? Fleas, for instance. Number two, I'd look at if there's any food allergy or anything that the cat might be allergic that it's breathing in. Because food allergies, that would be a quick fix, an easy fix. It would be just putting them onto a food that they're not allergic to. Okay, so first, rule out parasites. Second, rule out allergies. Okay, third,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm just nodding.
If it's not one of those two things, and they actually have baldness and lesions, then you want to look at the possibility of an inflammatory or autoimmune problem. For instance, cats can get something called eosinophilic granuloma complex. It's the eosinophilic granuloma or eosinophilic plaque, et cetera, which may be responsive to medication, specifically prednisone.
Uh-huh.
But before you start using prednisone, you know, that could have side effects. You want to rule out the other things first and try to get a firm diagnosis. So even though the cat's 16, if you've ruled out parasites and allergies, Phyllis, I consider a biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get a diagnosis.
That's how you diagnose what you just said. You diagnose it with a biopsy.
Yes. If you rule out the other things first. Because a biopsy on a 16-year-old, it does require some brief anesthesia.
And he already has kidney disease.
Well, then you want to use something that bypasses the kidneys, something that is metabolized by the liver. There are measures that could be taken. The biopsy is all of 5 or 10 minutes. It's not that big a deal. It's not long. And there are some things that could be reversed, okay? First look into the more common things, Phyllis, and the parasites and the allergies and then those eosinophilic things and then take it from there. But the more common is better to look at.
Phyllis, we're going to move it along, but thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Jane in Albany. Jane, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Hi, I have a really universal question, and I have a cat who eliminates outside the cat box. I've done all the stuff, you know, put another cat box there, pretty much everything you can think of. She's 14, and she was a rescue cat, and sometimes I wonder if maybe this was the reason she was brought to the shelter in the first place.
Hmm.
What can I do?
Okay. How long has she been?
I also rent my house.
Oh, boy.
And so she's been doing this for the entire 12 years I've had her.
Oh.
And I've tried everything. I've put down puppy pads.
All right. So,
and so she will go around them and pee. I don't know if she just likes to pee on wood or something. I don't know what to do.
Does no other cat, Jane?
Yes, there are other cats. We have one other cat in the house. She has been a single cat. You know, I've had her for 12 years. She's been a single cat. She's had another cat in the house. She's been a single cat. She had another cat, you know, so she's back and forth. It doesn't matter whether she's alone or there are other cats. It doesn't matter if we live near a place with dogs. I can't find anything to what's setting her off.
Oh, so your cat's done this elimination outside the box even when it's been the only cat in the household?
Yes.
So that means it's...
And I've spoken to my vet.
Okay.
And my vet is great, and they pretty much put up their hands, too.
Okay, so what happened, Jane, was that your cat most likely developed that behavior in response to something that was going on then. It might have been other cats or one other cat that was stressing it. And then, even after that original thing went away, your cat developed a substrate preference in which it decided that it prefers doing it in the other place. Okay?
Okay.
So there are five or six or seven things that you could do to try to change it. But after 12 years, you got a daunting task ahead of you, Jane.
Yeah.
But the six or seven things that I would do is, number one, you have to find all the places that the cat's ever done it outside the box. And you could do that with the UV light, a special light that a lot of vets sell.
Yep, that one.
And then you want to enzymatically neutralize all of those spots so that your cat doesn't keep getting the cue. Number three, you want to get a product called Cat Attract, which you could put into the litter. It attracts the cats to use the litter. And you want that litter to be a non-scented litter that doesn't have a lot of dust, doesn't have any scent, and preferably the clumping kind of litter. Number four, you want to get a number of litter boxes that are greater than the number of cats by one. So if you have three cats, you want four litter boxes. Okay.
Yep.
Number five, you want to enrich that cat's existence by playing with it, by doing the laser light, by creating a jungle gym for him or her to climb up. And you want to try to enrich that cat's existence so it's got other stuff to think about, okay? And then number six or seven, I lost count, is often medication is needed. This is usually a Prozac-like drug, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Okay.
And if you do all six or seven or eight things together, then you might stand a chance of denting the problem. But after 12 years, like I said, Jane, it's going to be a challenge.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Thank you. It's called Cat Attract?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jane.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Lee in Schenectady. Lee, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hiya.
We have a four-year-old cat. We got him from a coworker. He's wonderful. He's healthy, behaving great. My question stems from the fact that he looks like a football with four legs. He has this belly that looks distended, feels very firm. But he behaves normally, poops normally, pees normally. We've had him for 6 months. He's never complained. He doesn't seem to be in pain. So I just wanted to hear you say that this is normal.
Well, first of all, Lee, I wouldn't try a long bomb with him.
Oh, very nice. very
second
nice.
Of all, I agree that a cat's belly or abdomen in general should not be, it should not be distended and extremely firm. A lot of their abdomens are firm, but if it's distended, it makes me wonder, is the cat just fat? Okay?
Well,
fat in a way.
I think he is on the fat side, but he's also very firm. His belly is very...
All right. Well, the thing is that a lot of the fat goes to the tissue around the liver, Lee, and that's called the falciform ligament. And when you open the belly of a fat cat, you're inundated with all that fat because that's where it is. It's abdominal. It's right in the middle of the body. And if it's a fat cat, that often could be where it accumulates most. So if it's been 6 months, 8 months or whatever, and the cat's fine and healthy and happy, it's probably just that it's overweight. But on the other hand, there are some cancers that can have a predilection for the intestinal tract, lymphoma in particular, which is the most common cancer in a cat. But I really doubt that that's what it is, because after 6 months, that would not be a happy, healthy, acting cat at this point.
Exactly.
So it's probably nothing to worry about. Okay, Lee?
He just needs a diet.
Yes.
Okay.
Lee, thanks a lot.
And quickly, a good cat food for a four-year-old male cat.
Less.
Ha. Very good.
All right, thank you.
Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, I think we're going to wrap it up there, doctor. So a cat that's fat, you put the cat on what kind of a diet?
So the diet is one in which the cat gets less calories. Okay?
That's it? I mean, you don't, Atkins or anything?
Yeah, actually, we do a lot of Atkins stuff with cats in terms of them being true carnivores.
Yeah.
So they need protein. They don't need carbs nearly as much.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, an Atkins, but it's not the the actual Atkins-ness of the diet as much as it is the total calories that they get.
Mm-hmm.
And those calories, if you consider a lot of cats' lifestyles, is that they are understimulated. They're indoors, not doing much, number one. Number two, many, many, many households feed the cats as much food as they want. Because
yeah.
as soon as the bowl gets empty, the cat meows. The people are well-trained by their cats to refill it.
Yes.
This happens in my household as well, I can attest to. And so they're on as much calories as they want, and they get very little exercise. So if the cat, I totally recommend that cats from day one are brought up with a concept of limited resources on the earth, meaning that they get a finite amount of food.
Yeah.
You could spread it out through the day or give it to them in one fell swoop, whatever you want. But if they learn from the beginning that that's all they're going to get, then they're less inclined to agitate and make your life miserable down the road. But what happens is that you don't find out the cat's fat till they're 3, 4, 5 years of age. And at that point, they've had 4 years to get acclimated to getting all the food that they want. So if you start limiting it at that time, they make your life downright miserable.
Dr. Ron Scharf, that's the way we're going to end it. And we'll talk more about the cat diet and how many calories they should get, an active cat should get. But we have to wrap it up here. Support comes from Hills Alive, a Festival of the Arts for Southern Vermont arts groups, presenting a schedule of stage productions, concerts, and plays in venues throughout the region, hillsalive.org. Chez Albert, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring dishes inspired by French country cooking and introducing an expanded location at 178 North Pleasant Street, chezalbert.net for menu. Agway, Claverick, Chatham, Millerton, and Great Barrington open 7 days with propane fill-ups, garden supplies, pool supplies, outdoor furniture, pet food, and feeds at more, agwayny.com. And Brain Injury Association of Massachusetts, providing support, prevention, education, and advocacy for brain injury survivors and families, BIAMA.org. Dr. Ron Scharf, splendid as always. Zach Malloy at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered the calls. We're done. Rich Guthrie tomorrow on Vox Pop.